Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about Autism Stories. On today's episode, Ryan Haynes joins us to discuss his experience as a teacher, being a legal advocate, and testifying for a state bill regarding ableism and disability justice. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me here on Autism Stories.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And I'd like to start off our conversation by learning, where in the autistic community does your story begin?
Yeah, well, I'll just start by saying, introducing myself. My name is Ryan Ainsley. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I am a legal advocate at the Disability Law Center. And primarily one of the things that I do is I help parents and students, children, and any young adults on special education issues. I provide legal advice and resources and sometimes services as an advocate. But my story really starts all the way back when I was 3 years old. That's when I was diagnosed. Back then, it wasn't called autism spectrum, because this is like 1992-93. I was diagnosed with classic autism then. But eventually, as I progressed through schooling, they were, saying I had Asperger's syndrome. And then eventually, it's autism spectrum, and you take away the disorder part of that. But yeah, one of my earliest memories is I had like some PT, physical therapy, where I had, a therapist throw a medicine ball back and forth. And that's like, to me, and like to work on the gross motor. And we did a lot of vestibular stuff on tire swings, and those are like some of my earliest memories for getting therapy, and not necessarily bad. I don't think I really had the typical ABA therapy, which is nice. And then pre-K through 12, I had an IEP under autism spectrum disorder, and it was mostly for math and for social skills and study skills and organization. When I was in school, I loved going to school. I had great teachers, but I also had some special ed teachers and some general ed teachers who, they saw the IEP, they saw the disability category, they saw that I was, daydreaming or self, stimming, and I definitely felt like I was treated differently right away, like kindergarten, singled out a lot in the gen ed classroom. I would go down a little bit for in the special ed classroom. And it just, from early on, I knew that I was different. It wasn't anything where I wasn't like ashamed of it. I just knew that I was different and I had issues, I guess, things that I, needed to work on that was different from other students, such as like looking someone in the eye. And that was really, really hard for me to do that. We did a lot of like looking at the gaze, and that was really tough for me. As I got older and I became more self-aware, I realized, I am in special ed. I have peer support. And that was internalized as something bad. I'm getting this because I'm not good enough. There's something broken about me. I didn't use that language, but that's kind of how I felt. And by the time I was in high school, Really the only special ed services I had other than like some extra time for math was I went to a study skills classroom. And in this classroom, I became like the helper, you know, and it was actually written in my IEP that I would, you know, that I would like be helping these students. It's kind of odd that was in my IEP, but so it felt good to help other students, but I didn't want anyone to know that I was a student in that classroom. You know, I told people that, oh, I'm, you know, there was a program where, you know, kids who were in like honors program, and I was in honors English, would go into the autism room and help, you know, the autistic students, which I have, you know, some thoughts about that too. I don't know if that was, you know, that in itself was kind of like, you know, ableist, like, oh, help the needy children. But like, that's what I said I was. I said I was going in there as the helper, and people believe me. So that spurred me on to be a special ed teacher, which I did for nearly 6 years. You know, didn't have a great experience with that. I realized just how systemic ableism was in our system, special ed system, and it was really disheartening, really seeing just how drastically different my students were treated, how I was treated, how I didn't get the same curriculum, you know, to provide them as their non-disabled peers. And so, you know, I said, I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave. And I was looking for advocacy. Like, that word was on my mind, and I don't know where it came from other than like, oh, advocacy, advocate, advocacy. Like, that just kept on going in my mind. And so I looked that up, and the Disability Law Center was looking for an advocate. And that was, you know, February 2022, I did the interview, and then I started on the 28th of March. I left teaching. My last day was on the 24th of March, 2022. And then I started as an advocate in March 28th. So it's been a little more than 2 years, and it's really probably the best decision I've ever made.
I love hearing that. And you're part of the youth services team at the Minnesota Disability Law Center. What are some of the most common issues that you help youth and their families navigate through?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of issues.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. And I think it's national, not just in the state, but systemically right now, we have a huge short staffing crisis in Minnesota in every single district. And that's especially goes into special education. You know, there's a lack of teachers right now, lack of paraprofessionals, lack of nursing services. Districts are cutting nursing services at the moment, which is really tough. All of this kind of leads to a lot of denial of free, appropriate public education. You know, services, accommodations are not being met. Children are, and young adults are being pressured by school districts to go into a more restrictive setting, not because of a need of the child, but because of short staffing. And that is a huge, huge issue. You know, pushing from setting two, which is, you know, like 25 to 50% of the time in a special ed, you know, getting special ed services, to a setting four, which is a completely self-contained school. And those, we're seeing that all the time. We're seeing a lot of disciplinary issues. Right now, Minnesota has a K-3 suspension ban that you know, has went in effect this year, but already we're seeing a lot of kids in, and almost exclusively kids with disabilities, getting suspended. The caveat is that it is like a subjective, you know, danger to themselves and others. Right. And that, you know, that seems like it'd be apparent, but it's very subjective. It's usually comes down to, again, they're all connected to this short staffing crisis. Like, the schools are not prepared for these students. They don't have the accommodations in the IEP. They don't, you know, have the staffing. They don't have the safe environment. They may have teachers who, you know, one thing in our state is that because of the staff shortage and retention issues, there's just a lot of upheaval and a lot of turnover in special education. We are getting, there's a lot of tier one teachers, meaning that teachers who are teaching in like variants, meaning that they don't have their special ed degree. They are maybe even just not even in school yet. They're about to go into school. And so I can imagine when I got my special ed degree and I had like 1,000 hours of time in classrooms, you know, with my degree. And some of these teachers are going in without even having a class yet. Just the idea of like, oh, you will get a degree. That lack of training, lack of understanding of kids' needs, it all kind of combines. We have a lot of truancy cases as well. And a lot of that goes to, you know, there's medical things that aren't being provided so like they should be, or there's just medical needs and, you know, these absences are becoming unexcused. And then there's truancy letters and there is the parents alleging abuse or mistreatment or neglect. A lot of the parents are feeling it's retaliation. These true, they're saying, oh, I'm going to keep my child because I don't feel safe in this school. And then they're sending a truancy letters. And, you know, instead of trying to work with the parent, be like, okay, we're going to do this and this and this to help the child. They're sending, you know, they're having the county send truancy letters, you know, transportation issues. Lots of bullying, tremendous amount of bullying based on disability discrimination factors. It's a lot of misunderstanding of the students, misunderstanding of their disabilities, of their need for regulation, sensory needs, the focus on compliance in special ed programs leads, in my opinion, to these explosive behaviors that lead to these disciplinary procedures. And that even goes all the way back to, you know, what are they providing to, like, prevent these in the first place, right? So it's all connected, but I'll be blunt, there's a huge crisis in short staffing, and the kids are really not getting, you know, what they need in special education. So we see a lot of issues and these same issues over and over and all of what I said, all the above, over and over and over and over again, all throughout the state. And it's disheartening, but it also creates a little passion in me to be like, okay, there's systemic changes. What can I do to advocate for, you know, systemic change while, you know, individually helping parents and clients and any young adults?
Now, you had mentioned this earlier, but prior to your work as a legal advocate, you worked in schools and in school districts supporting students and let your students' interests kind of steer instruction along with things like sensory accommodations. But from what I read, higher-ups didn't want that, and instead they wanted behavior management kind of more along the lines of ABA principles. What would you say about the impact of ABA principles on the students in the classrooms that you taught?
Well, one thing that I noticed right away is just the rigidity of the methods that I was supposed to implement the strict schedules that I was supposed to use and like the, you know, lack of transition time, a real big focus on getting a task done, you know, as soon as possible, you know, like always has to be on task. They, you know, there were times where students, you know, I saw a lot of, and even just in other classrooms, a lot of just like physically moving students, which I felt very uncomfortable with. Lots of hand over hand, lots of like, you know, non-consensual touching. And like, it's, you know, that leads to, you know, some of these practices, you know, it can lead to either sometimes there may be abuse, or like in the future, if students are just, you know, taught to comply to adults, or, you know, do whatever a teacher or a paraprofessional or a staff member says, that's going to lead to dangerous situations. And this kind of rigid schedule just led to these explosive behaviors. There wasn't a focus on, in education, we have like what's called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which says before any learning can happen, a student's needs need to be met. So the need to rest, the need for food, the need for shelter, and the need for belonging. You know, sometimes I felt, you know, I felt like kind of the rigid, you know, methods that I was being taught really made my students feel like they didn't belong and couldn't be themselves. You know, I was told that, you know, students can't get up and move and stim freely. Like, they need to sit in a chair. They need to follow this very rigid type of schedule. And, you know, this goes along with what's already in the IEPs, which are usually based on kind of a deficit model, because when you're going into to get services, the child has to prove that they are lacking something, whether it's, social skills or, you know, academic needs. And so it's based on this deficit model. And really over time, I realized, oh, these type of programs, these types of curriculum that I'm being like really pushed to do, they're trying to get autistic students to look like neurotypical students and to function like neurotypical children. And because my students weren't neurotypical, that is just their whole, you know, of course it's a protest, because it's protesting every, when they're not being taught autonomy or self, you know, we say self-advocacy. I tried to put that in goals, but that was always super secondary to, you know, getting these skills and kind of having this rigid schedule. So, yeah, it's no wonder that we have these explosive behaviors when we're doing things that kind of went against the whole nature of you know, my students, really. It was really disheartening, and I had a lot of, I was in fight or flight mode, you know, often. Like, I was having, like, PTSD a lot of the times. Like, I was remembering things and, you know, and just, I did my best. I really tried to create an environment that, you know, was really built their confidence and these sensory methods. But it was really, you know, whatever I tried to do was seen as, you're not providing enough of this. You know, it's not robust enough. It's not
controlled enough.
Yeah, it's not controlled. There's like a certain word that I'm trying to. It's not rigorous. It's
yeah,
not rigorous. And not teaching these kids grit. Those were like, I was always saying, you need to increase the rigor. Yeah, they like being in their class because they get to do sensory things and they get to, you know, color, and they get to draw, and they get to, you know, just kind of feel safe in the room. That's all well and great, is what I heard. That's well and great, but now it's time for the rigor. Now it's time for them to actually be doing all of these things. And yes, I, of course, want to teach them all these skills, but why does everything have to be like on a certain time crunch, you know? And this goes to the broader education, like, you know, the standards.
Sure.
It's like, what, you know, what is the whole idea of education, I guess? Like, what, if, why are we educating the kids anyway? You know, like, are we educating them to just be compliant, you know, and kind of capitalist mindset, which a school is kind of based off of? Or are we teaching, you know, the whole child, the whole student, you know, and engaging in these, you know, experiences? And, you know, I'll admit, I struggle to, you know, manage the class and to kind of follow things that went against my own philosophies. But as a teacher who, you know, I was not tenured, you know, there's a lot of pressure on teachers, and it was an uphill battle every single day. And I just, you know, I that's why I had to leave, because I wasn't providing the students with really what they needed. And it wasn't just because of me or a lack of, you know, teacher training or anything. It was kind of a larger systemic thing. And it was also, you know, just a lack of understanding of my students, who they truly are. I felt like there's a lack of true empathy. I felt there's just a lot of condescending, just other teachers, just, you know, unconsciously. It's not like something where they're like, it's always well-intentioned, but the way they taught to my students, like, they, some of them were like toddlers, right? Yeah, it was just really hard to see, and just to hear, you know, I had some, you know, I would have like a staff member come up and say, oh, and they didn't know I was autistic, saying, oh, you know, it's really good you're helping these kids, you know, because I know how autism is just so, it's so tough, and it's really great that you're here to help them overcome it. And that is sadly a mainstream view. And that's not anything that I could, you know, vibe with
at all. So something else you recently did that I would love to know more about is that you testified for your state bill HF 4159, which, if enacted, would guarantee 2 hours of instruction for teacher prep programs on the topics of ableism and disability justice taught by a person with a disability for licensure and recertification requirements. This is so needed. Can you share with us a little bit about your testimony?
Yeah, it was definitely like a full circle moment. It was so powerful to sit in front of members of the House with six other people, all disabled, many of us autistic, and just really sharing our story. I mean, some of the things that, you know, I've already kind of talked about, what I said, I basically said, like, this is what ableism is. It's, you know, it's faced by people with disabilities every single day. Educators will benefit greatly from an understanding of ableism and disability justice. I, you know, kind of like I explained earlier, I repeatedly witnessed a need for understanding of my students. I observe implicit biases by teachers and admin who had negative preconceived notions. You know, I felt that my students' strengths and capabilities that they brought into the classroom daily were overlooked. I, you know, we had a program, you know, called the unique learning system that we had to use. And just like the term special and unique are just so condescending. And so, like, I kind of talked about that. I talked a little bit about how when I was in school, I, you know, was a helper, and, you know, I didn't want to admit I was a student, that I had an IEP. And then I, you know, kind of ended it by saying, you know, educators who work with disabilities are just under a tremendous amount of stress. They're spread far too thin. And how we as a community of autistic adults and adults with disabilities, we're an incredible resource for these schools and teachers, and that we should be involved in the education of students with disabilities because, you know, really no other marginalized group is similarly excluded from the discussion about how to educate members of their own communities. So what I wrote in there is like, we would think it absurd to have a conversation about how to educate any other group without involving members of that group. But that this is the norm with students with disabilities because of how ableism is structured in our society. So I share a little bit about like my, you know, I was a student, a teacher, and now an advocate, you know, and I just say, you know, I have a deep and lifelong experience in this system. So, you know, I ask you to support this bill. And currently it has been introduced. It was in the House, it's introduced in the Senate. But it's, they're on a recess right now. So it hasn't, you know, there hasn't been any testimony or anything like that, but it has been authored, by Senator, Mary Kunesh. And it's been introduced. So we're hoping that, like when this next session comes up that we're able to pass it. But the caveat is that, they want to change the word required to encouraged because of budgetary issues. Right now we're in like a bonding session, I guess, not a budgetary session. And so right now they're like encouraged, you know, like I feel like pretty much everyone agrees with like, oh, the idea of it. But I don't know if everyone in the legislature and the Minnesota Senate and in the House actually believe ableism is like real. I think they like the idea of uplifting people's disabilities, but I think there's definitely, especially, you know, some Republicans who don't believe there's any systemic oppression at all, you know? So that's kind of a barrier, but we're hoping that it is enacted and at least encouraged. I wish it was required. The word required was in there, but so hoping for the best there. But it was just a wonderful experience. It's kind of a formative experience, I think. You know, like it's going to be something I remember forever. So I felt honored to be able to do that. I think it was definitely the first bill to include the word ableism in Minnesota. It may have been the first in the country, even. I don't quote me on that, to use ableism, you know, in a bill. So, you know, I was very proud of that and more so proud of, you know, the other testifiers as well and how we came together for this.
So it certainly seems you're doing a lot of really important work for the autistic community. So that makes me always think about burnout. So what are some things that you're doing to not get burnout, to continue to do this crucial advocacy work?
You know, that's something I figure out along the way, but really, you know, since I have been a lot more busy and I've been a lot more active in policy work for the Disability Law Center, I've been really taking intentional time to meditate in the morning before I go to bed, make sure I like walk a little bit every day. I'm not just sitting around. I don't mean that as an ableist way, you know, because I know that there are, you know, needs around that. But for me, it's moving my body, meditating, you know, taking it easy on myself, also resting. I recently did a presentation with, Joyner Emmerich, who is an autistic, non-binary, person who's in the Minneapolis, public school, school board. And they're amazing. One thing they said is that really struck me, and I think it's probably life-changing for me, is that as autistic people, a lot of us, because of, you know, the lifelong masking that we do, even unintentionally, unconsciously, it's our bodies get more tired, you know, and it's and not just with that, but like also for me, I like kind of spatial awareness issues. My body is space. That's kind of the therapy I had when I was younger. And so my posture hasn't always been great. So a lot of it is that, you know, a lot of, you know, us in the autistic community just are more tired, you know, like we need more time to rest. And so that is something that I'm telling myself is, hey, you need more time to rest, and it's okay. You maybe won't get this done today, but if you rest, you'll be able to do it better the next day, or the next day, or the next day, whenever you can do it. So, you know, that resting, movement when I can, and just really kind of going inward and meditating and trying to, you know, really be in the present. And then of course, like, you know, watching anime and reading and coloring and, you know, watching the stand-up special, like stuff that's going to fill up your cup as well.
And Ryan, lastly, how can our listeners learn about you beyond this interview?
Right now, I haven't been such a public person, so I don't have a website or anything. You can certainly find me on Facebook, Ryan Hainsey. You know, I should probably maybe get a little more social media presence, but that's really what I'm on. And then Ryan Hainsey on LinkedIn. Feel free to get in contact there. Feel free to message me on there. I'm usually very responsive, and I'm definitely happy to, you know, there may be times where if I'm too tired or something, I may not answer right away, but I do try to answer messages that are sent to me. Yeah, feel free if you want to contact me those ways.
Well, Ryan, thanks so much for joining me today and sharing your experiences with all of us.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks so much to Ryan for the conversation. To learn more about Ryan, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. We always love hearing from you and would especially love to hear from you relating to this episode on what would be some things you'd like to see schools and academic institutions do to become more accommodating for autistic people. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what has worked for them and about the things they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients, then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to help you get the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories. And if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone else you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, it would be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Blutcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.